Okay, good morning, everyone. Sorry for the little delay, and sorry for my sore throat. It's nice to see such a crowd here today. You know, I remember 2 years ago at MEC 2012, the hybrid sessions, they weren't as popular. So it is awesome that we can have a talk today about hybrid, setting it up. But before getting started, I would like to know who of you was at the hybrid architecture session yesterday? Okay, that's a fair amount. Yeah, sure. So there will be a little overlap with that session because I've got to, you know, ease into things a little bit, talk about hybrid architecture. But the main goal for the session today is actually trying to explain how do you go about setting up that hybrid. So the hybrid configuration wizard will talk about it in length and in depth, but talk about some of the challenges on a technical level too. So for those who don't know me, I'm Michael van Horenbeek, also sometimes referred to as Michael van Hybrid, because I kind of like hybrid stuff. You know, by the end of the session, I hope you'll share some of the passion with me. So let's get going. I only have 75 minutes, and this used to be a very good format in Exchange 2010, because it would literally take me 75 minutes to get all the steps done, about 72 steps, 1 minute a step. But then, you know, Exchange 2013 came out, and building a hybrid configuration literally became much, much easier. So in theory, I could say build a hybrid deployment in 7 minutes, and that would be quite accurate from a hybrid configuration wizard point of view. But if we take everything into account that comes around the hybrid configuration wizard, 75 minutes plus one, maybe, might be more accurate. So today, and for some reason, the clicker isn't working. So today we will be talking about hybrid deployments, a little introduction, what is hybrid, what does it look like, what do you use it for, going to the architecture, what are the components in a hybrid deployment that you have to take into account, so what is very important. Talk about the hybrid configuration wizard, the piece that actually makes it happen. Talk about mailbox moves, because you know you'll have a hybrid deployment, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be able to get your mailboxes up there. You should, but there are some things that you need to take into account. Talk about troubleshooting, and we'll also have a look at what's next. What will the future have? How will you be able to manage a hybrid deployment? Because it's slightly different from having a purely on-premises environment too. So, when we talk about a hybrid deployment, or when I go to customers and talk about hybrid, the expectations are very much like a Rubik's Cube. It's many moving parts, can be a little bit daunting at times. It can be very difficult, you know, especially in the earlier days, hybrid was very, very difficult, and they made a good job at making it easier, but still there's so much involved that it's very important to have a good understanding of what it actually is, because the better your understanding, the easier it is to troubleshoot if you ever get into issues, the easier it is to manage. And that's literally what it's all about. Setting it up, you don't have to worry about it. You know, that's what the HCW Hybrid Configuration Wizard does for you. And also, when I go out and talk to customers, they're not always sure about, you know, where to start. What do I do first? What are the critical steps to look at when start building that hybrid deployment? So, what is a hybrid deployment? And this is probably the most easy slide in the slide deck, but it is, to me, also the most important one. Because it to me, it clearly illustrates that the hybrid deployment is not a single Exchange organization. From a technical level, everyone knows, yes, it is true, but it's very important that whatever you do, you're tying two, Exchange forests, if you will, one in Office 365 in the data centers for Microsoft, and your own on-premises environment, you're tying them together, but because they still are on a technical level, two separate forests, two separate organizations, there are some things that work differently than an on-premises and purely on-premises environment. And as a result of that, some things that you will be handling in the future, like mailbox moves, are quite different than an on-premises environment. They require a different approach, a different mindset. So basically, you know, the hybrid configuration wizard will, through the internet, set up a what I like to call a sort of virtual organization. It's a virtual exchange organization that we will be working in. But in the end, always keep in mind it is two separate environments. And you see that when you use PowerShell. You have one PowerShell instance, you know, pointing at your on-premises environment, and you'll have one pointing at your online environment. And sure, you can have them running in one window, and it's one big happy family. But in the end, you're still managing two separate environments, even though that is fully transparent to your users, but it won't to you. So why deploy hybrid? When we first talked about Office 365 a few years ago, then it was all about going to the cloud, and in some way it still is. But what are the reasons? Why would you go to a customer? Why would someone, you know, think about deploying hybrid? And there are many, many good reasons. One is long-term coexistence. So it's as if you would have multiple on-premises forests and you decide to keep them all. Then you would set up coexistence between those forests. That's why you would set up hybrid with a or recently multiple tenants if you want to. But also, if you're contemplating of moving to Office 365 permanently, a hybrid deployment gives you quite a bit of advantages. And one of them being Exchange Online Archiving, by which I mean an on-premises mailbox and a archive in the cloud. So I have got a session about that too, and we'll talk about that in depth there. Large migrations. Sure, there's tooling that you can use to get all your mailboxes in the cloud, but they don't always give the same functionality. Well, I'm pretty sure they don't. Hybrid mailbox moves, you know, the transparent moves to your users, is the biggest feature that helps you, you know, move easily from your on-premises environment to Office 365. And we'll talk about the hybrid mailbox moves because they are really, really good and really important. But again, there's you know, a few tweaks, a few switches here and there that you need to be aware of. And then last but not least, and luckily the last one is kind of, you know, dying out slowly though, interaction with third-party applications. So imagine your CIO comes up to you and says, hey, we're going to go to Office 365. Okay, great, you set up your hybrid deployment. But then, you know, during the planning phase, you see, oh, well, we're still using this kind of server that interacts with Exchange, that has some hooks in it. Some of the solutions out there cannot, you know, interact directly with Office 365 because they didn't make take the effort to make changes, which might require you to keep an on-premises server. It used to be that, you know, people kept the hybrid deployment for, you know, unauthenticated SMTP, but there are other solutions that you can do. And as we will talk about later, also Office 365 gives you a variety of options for devices to be able to send SMTP. So this might look familiar from yesterday's session, but a hybrid configuration is built around four, you know, major building blocks. The first one being Exchange Federation. The Exchange Federation allows you to have FreeBSD cross-premises, to have mail tips, cross-premises message tracking, and I probably should add, not really, but e-discovery cross-premises, although that's slightly changing, and we'll talk about that too. The second one is secure mail flow. So anything between your on-premises and cloud environments is TLS encrypted so that it's secure by default. But because it is TLS encrypted, it also makes sure that when you send messages between your on-premises and cloud environments, messages are being perceived as being internal. If that would be unauthenticated or unencrypted traffic, the message headers, which make sure that a message is perceived as being internal, would be stripped off, and a colleague who is sitting with his mailbox in Office 365 would be recognized as an external recipient, which would cause all sorts of issues for mail tips and then the behavior in Outlook, your contact card, and that's something you definitely don't want to. Then there's DirSync. it's not really a feature, rather an enabler for your hybrid deployment. And let me put it quite frankly, this is the single most important thingy that makes it happen. You know, DirSync, having DirSync in a healthy state means probably having a healthy hybrid deployment. Sure, there are other things that can, you know, fail and cause issues. But if your DirSync isn't working or is behaving badly, I guarantee you, you will run into issues you probably don't want to run into. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But mainly, the DirSync allows you to have a unified global address list across premises, making sure that whenever you move a mailbox, they just don't see the mailboxes in Office 365, but they also see all the recipients that are still on premises, or vice versa. If you have moved about 90% of your workforce into Exchange Online, the on-premises users will also see the mailboxes that are in the cloud in their global address list. So that is quite an important feature. And then last but not least, and I already discussed it briefly, the mailbox moves, which heavily leverage the mailbox replication service, allows you to do online mailbox moves. So you could, you know, be moving mailboxes during the day while people are working, and the impact to those users will literally be very small. Sure, they will have to restart Outlook afterwards, but, you know, what's a restart during the day? So that's the main four building blocks, the main four areas where a hybrid deployment comes into play. So when we're talking about setting up hybrid, there are a few prerequisites. And these are the most basic prerequisites that I can come up with. I'm not taking into account any, you know, prerequisites purely for having an Exchange on premises, purely for having a hybrid server on premises. Because if you're still running Exchange 2007, and you're deciding to go hybrid, then you basically have two options. You either put in an Exchange 2010 Service Pack 3 hybrid server, or you do an Exchange 2013. But before you do that, so it's not like, you know, take the Exchange installation CD, pop it in the server, and then 5 minutes later, hey, there it is. There's a little bit more planning involved around certificates, auto-discover, things that, you know, you need to take into account, especially to your environment. And because that it's very specific to your own environment, I would never be able to cover that in 75 minutes. And I really need to, you know, squeeze it in 75 minutes. But once you're there, so assuming that you have a hybrid server, and in this case, we'll be talking about a hybrid server 2013, what do you need? First of all, DirSync. Up and running, no issues. That's very important. Second of all, that hybrid server, up and running, working perfectly. I've attended some of the other sessions here, and there is one tool that came up that is very, very useful, and that would be the remote connectivity analyzer. When I go out to clients and I talk to them, and they say to me, so when are we ready to, you know, start running the hybrid configuration wizard? I give them the remote connectivity analyzer address, and I tell them, run the remote connectivity analyzer, and if everything shows a green ticky-ticky, hey, I'm good. I'll go in and do the hybrid configuration wizard. However, if there is a single error, web services, auto-discover, anything else, especially auto-discover, fix it first. There's no point in trying to fiddle around to make things work, because, you know, a hybrid configuration really relies on these things to work perfectly. So it's good that these tools are out there because they really help you, but you need to take advantage of them. Then there is a certificates part. As I said, auto-discover, web services, it needs to be a third-party certificate. It needs to be published onto the internet, so public CA. They need to be, you know, covering everything they should. So you shouldn't get any cert warnings. But that's something the remote connectivity analyzer will catch for you. But there's also the TLS certificate, the one that you're going to use for transport. And we'll be talking about that too, because that's a very important one. Especially the hybrid configuration wizard can be a little bit picky about the certificate that it will accept and that it won't accept. Just make sure that you're using a public CA for that certificate. Can you use a wildcard certificate? Yes, you can. Should you? Well, it's a discussion that you can have. I've done it with and without, both work, so it's up to you. A common misconception, however, is ADFS. And truth is that there isn't much information out there that you can do hybrid without ADFS. You could just as easily use password sync if you want to, which takes away a little bit of the complexity. I personally like ADFS. It gives you a lot of flexibility towards, you know, security. But in some environments, especially smaller customers, ADFS can be a little bit overkill. Additionally, if you deploy ADFS, it becomes a very critical part in the environment, meaning that if you don't have ADFS, or if your ADFS server is down, you won't have access to your services. So it's a trade-off. I would feel very uncomfortable going into a customer and just deploy a single ADFS server and tell them, hey, you're good to go. There's not much, you know, reliability there. And because it's such a critical component, you would actually have to go in and, you know, put in a second server, which is great. But then their internet connection goes down. Those two servers don't, you know, serve a lot of purpose, do they? So you need to have one or the other mechanism to make sure that your ADFS infrastructure is highly available. And one thing you can, how you can do that is leverage, for instance, Windows Azure, where you have one server on premises and you put one in Windows Azure, and that works really well. Is it some additional complexity? Sure it is. But compared to some of the other things that some companies are building on premises, yeah, it's a piece of a cake. So another additional component, or optional component, I should say, is the Edge Transport Server. They brought it back in Service Pack 1. Yay. But there are some customers out there that really require a device sitting in their perimeter network which will terminate incoming mail flow traffic, because they don't want to open up a firewall which allows direct traffic into the Hub Transport Server. And I'm going to, you know, break the news a little bit for one of the slides later on, but having a third-party device in between your hybrid server and Office 365 for mail flow, not a good idea. Will you be able to get it to work if you fiddle around? Probably. Is it complex? Hell yeah. Do you want to do it? No. Are you supported? No. So if you have these stringent, you know, security requirements of, you know, having something in the perimeter network, your only option basically is having an Edge Transport server. And before you could use an Exchange 2010 Service Pack 3 Edge Transport with Exchange 2013, but there's no point in doing that anymore. There's now the 2013 Edge. The good thing is that the hybrid configuration wizard can handle that. It can, you know, immediately work with that Edge server. It will, you know, depending on the input that you'll give it, it will recognize, hey, there is an Edge server. Let's, you know, take it into account for a hybrid configuration. So there's little extra effort involved in making that work for your hybrid deployment. Usually when I go up to a customer and show them this slide, they're like, kind of seems a little bit complex. But it summarizes all the components that come into play for a hybrid deployment. So basically, at your left-hand side, you'll have the Office 365 part. And at the right-hand side, you see the internal components, broken down in Active Directory, ADFS, Exchange, and all the different components that tie in together. So what you'll see here is that on an Exchange level, you'll have the organizational relationships talking to Exchange Online. And as I said before, that's one of the building blocks that enable Mailtips, FreeBSY, and so on and so on. Then you have the transport layer, I'd say, which can be a on-premises mailbox server, or it could be an on-premises Edge server. And it will talk to EOP, the formerly known FOPI. So the reason why I've broken it down in CAS and mailbox is to really show what Exchange server role is responsible for handling this little piece in a hybrid deployment. Does that mean that you need to, you know, roll them out separately? No, it can be a multi-role server. But there's also a little confusion in there, in the fact that if you have a multi-role server, you'll, for instance, for the SMTP certificate, you'll take the certificate, assign it to SMTP, and you're golden, right? If, however, you've decided to deploy a CAS server separately and a mailbox server separately, there is some confusion on where do I install that, you know, SMTP certificate. Well, it's actually, it's easy too. You install it on the CAS and on the mailbox server, because The CAS server is where the messages are received, and the mailbox server is a server that is sending the messages. So you basically need to have that SMTP certificate on both server roles, but you only have to do it once if you have a multi-role, and you have to do it on both separate server roles. But this is just, you know, from a logical point of view to point out that there, which server role is responsible for it. You'll also see the ADFS server talking to an ADFS proxy, talking to the authentication endpoint in Windows Azure AD. You'll see DirSync talking to Windows Azure AD, kind of broken down in the protocols they use, how the client flow goes. So this is a, you know, a poster that you could use to always refer to for a hybrid deployment. So how does a typical deployment process look like from a technical point of view? I'm not talking about project management and going into a customer and gathering requirements, which is equally important. Don't forget that. It's really important to really understand where they're going to go so that you can translate that into a technical design, a technical way of, you know, going hybrid. And actually, it's crucial. It's like 80% of your work when going hybrid. But typically, you know, you deploy Exchange, and I mean deploying Exchange, making sure that it works. Remote Connectivity Analyzer says, okay, you're good to go. You configure single sign-on, which can be, you know, DirSync, password sync, or it could be ADFS. It's up to whatever you want to have in your deployment. You actually set up DirSync, make sure that it works, make sure to enable the hybrid mail flow in the hybrid deployment in DirSync. And actually, when you're setting up DirSync and you enable that button, all that you do is assign a bunch of permissions to an account to write back a few attributes. There are about 7 attributes nowadays that get written back, which enable any of the features that I talked about. So the safe sender list, some UM settings are being written back to your on-premises Active Directory. But more importantly, for Exchange Online archiving, so in the scenario where you have a mailbox on-premises and archive in the cloud, the archive status is written back. But I'll talk about that in depth in the other session. Once you've set up DirSync and it runs and it works fine, you go on, you configure your certificates on your server. If you haven't already done so probably you already have the certificate running on your Exchange Web Services, else the Remote Connectivity Analyzer will, you know, pop up an error. Then you configure the web services, and it's a little bit painful. Well, not painful, I mean, the Hybrid Configuration Wizard does a really good job at tying things together and doing that really quickly. But the only thing it doesn't do is enable the MRS proxy for the Exchange Web Services virtual directory. Yeah, I can see why. But you know, you still have to go in and on the internet-facing client access server, so the ones that are servicing your hybrid deployment, you have to go in and go to the web services virtual directory and enable that MRS proxy. And I'll quickly show the command. It's just, you know, one-liner. It's easily done, but it would be great to see that in the hybrid configuration wizard afterwards. It's easily forgotten because it's such a small step in the process and there are a lot of things going on. But you know, even though it surfaces quite quickly when you try moving a mailbox, it's something to think about. So once you're there, you run the hybrid configuration wizard, which literally takes 10 minutes, 15 minutes the first time you run it, depending on, you know, a few factors. And once that's done, if you want to, depending on your situation, you configure your MX records, and hey, you're golden. There's your hybrid deployment. You can start moving mailboxes in no time. So that's from a Eagle's perspective, how you would go about. So what are the supported topologies? Well, there used to be a lot of options, but with the Wave 14 Office 365 being eradicated, that isn't really relevant anymore. However, on premises, you can have a variety of servers. If you're still running Exchange 2003, which you really, really shouldn't, because of support ending next week, the only option that you have is to go with an Exchange 2010 Service Pack 3 server. Will that work? Yes. Will it work fine? Yes. Are there better options? Yes. I personally prefer Exchange 2013 for a variety of reasons. You know, simplicity, better hybrid support, better hybrid, you know, troubleshooting, logging, which will really, really help you in the process. But if you have no option to, you know, get rid of that Exchange 2013, hey, you'll be more than happy. However, in any other scenario where you can have an Exchange 2013 and it is a feasible option for your environment, do it. So some of the deployment considerations when going hybrid, there are quite a bit of them, especially in the planning phase. You should talk about any of these with the business, with your customer, delegates. I mean, mailbox permissions. We're talking about two forests. Remember one of the first slide I had? Well, there are some things that don't work. I cannot assign mailbox permissions to a mailbox on premises when my mailbox is in the cloud, or vice versa. So if you have shared mailboxes, so shared mailboxes and a bunch of people working with them, try moving them all together. Happy customer. If you break them up, like, I'll move this one today and the other one tomorrow, and you'll keep the shared mailbox on premises, they'll surely lose access to that shared mailbox. From a planning perspective, that can be a real pain in the royal behind. Because usually, you know, you start with a pilot. You take a bunch of users and you move them. But now you have to take into account the permissions they have to other mailboxes. So you start with, let's say, 5 mailboxes, and you start graphing out where do they have access to. And then in some environments, you end up with a spider web of 50 mailboxes tied in together in one way or the other one. So your pilot just grew from 5 mailboxes to 50 mailboxes in no time. So, you know, pick your pilot users wisely and make sure that you take that into account too. Mailbox permissions, as I said, not supported yet. Maybe in the future that it will, and I honestly believe it's a big ask. So, at some point in the future, that will be working, but today it is not. Interaction with legacy applications, third-party applications. Is there anything hooked into Exchange? I said it earlier, but I want to stress it out again. It's very important that you take that into account. Do you have an SMTP gateway, something that sends a lot of messages? Even the options Office 365 gives you to send bulk email, they are, you can send a lot of email in Office 365. But there are customers, I have a customer who sends about 1 million emails a day from one user. It's a service account which generates a bunch of reports. And okay, I can see why they do it, and it's their business process, and I'm not arguing against it. But that might cause some issues. Throttling, limits in Office 365. So if that's the case, take that into account. Know what you're going to have to do with it. Maybe they need to change something. Maybe if they really want to go in to Office 365 in the end entirely, you just move it out of the way. You change the process, but take that into account. Bandwidth. It's a critical one, I would say. If you have 20 gigabytes of data, you're good. If you have 20 gigs of data and a 256K internet connection, that's big of a problem. That doesn't happen very often. Usually we're talking about, hey, we've got a 10 meg line and a terabyte of data, 10 terabytes of data, 60 terabytes of data that we have to get up in the cloud. There is no option to kind of dump a database on a disk and then ship the disk to Office 365. It doesn't exist. What you have on premises has to go through that internet pipe to Office 365 at one point. Sure, you can do one mailbox at a time, but that could be a very lengthy process, a process you don't want to go through. So there are options. Some providers allow you to temporarily boost your bandwidth. Some providers will charge the out of you for that, but you need to take that into account. So there are other strategies, dumping the parts of the email into an archive. I've even seen customers, because they don't have the bandwidth, they have no option to do that. They're like in a remote area, almost in a desert. So they have one DSL connection, and that's what they're getting. No fiber, no nothing else. So that customer got a little bit creative, and they dumped literally through retention policies everything in archives. Mailboxes were down to like 50 megs each, and then they exported everything to a PSD and handed it over to the user like, hey, this is your previous mailbox. Is that a good solution? No, I don't think so. But it is a very creative one. It's just reality. I mean, not everyone has a big pipe into the office. It just doesn't work. Certificates. I keep putting it out there, but for instance, on my blog, the most popular article is how to configure certificates in Exchange, or how to troubleshoot certificates in Exchange. It doesn't get any better with the additional certificate requirements for hybrid. So make sure you get these right. Make sure that you talk to your customer, that he fully understands what it's all about, and that you don't run into issue. More importantly, monitor them. Luckily, Office 365 nowadays, they will, you know, send you out a warning like, hey, this certificate, especially for ADFS, is going to expire. It didn't do that before. And believe me, I got a number of calls like, hey, we cannot log in anymore. It's like, yeah, your certificate expired like 2 days ago. Especially ADFS with, you know, the default having the auto cert rollover could become a little bit, you know, tricky at times. Just make sure that you take that into account, that you take that to your customer and talk about it. And then the data footprint, which is directly kind of related to the bandwidth. The more data that you have, the more challenging it will be to move it. Especially, you know, large mailboxes. I love large mailboxes. And it's great. Office 365 gives you 50 gigs per mailbox. But imagine that you're all in. All your users get a 50 gig mailbox on premises if you ever want to build it. Even 10 gigs, 15 gigs per mailbox. It's great. But the more data that you have, the more that you have to get up there. It's a little trade-off, you know? You really have to think about the strategy behind it. It's more from a process point of view than it is from a technical point of view. So once you decided on how you're going to do it, you can easily build a solution to do it. But it can be very, very, very challenging. So let me try and jump into a short demo for some of the things for preparing for a hybrid deployment, more specifically for the certificates. So I'm going to try and get this up on screen. And if all works well, I should have a virtual machine running here. OK. So for some who noticed, yes, this is running in Azure. No, it is not supported in production. Don't do it. But it's a great environment to have a test environment in. Especially for hybrid, it works really, really well. So remember I said there is that certificate used for TLS, right? You get a certificate from a provider, you install that certificate, and you're good to go. So you do a get exchange certificate, you install that certificate, you run the hybrid configuration wizard, and throughout one of the steps, and we'll go through the steps later, it doesn't find the certificate. And you're like, certificate is assigned to the SMTP services, however, the hybrid configuration wizard isn't picking it up. It's not giving you an error either, because that's something else. It just doesn't show up. Well, this is probably because the the certificate that you have isn't issued by a third party. So let's take a look at the properties of this certificate. There you go. Oh. Yeah. And I'm sorry to be typing a little bit slow, but I'm from Europe. We use AZERTY in the country I live in, and this is QWERTY, so it's killing me. Anyway, one thing I wanted to point out is the value called root CA type. It is third party. That is critical. The hybrid configuration wizard will look at that little tiny thing, and it will look at it, that it's third party. Now, recently, I had someone come up to me and said, the certificate couldn't be found. And we did take a look at the certificate, and it was, you know, issued by DigiCert. So the certificate was good, was golden. But when we did take a look at the properties, the certificate actually said enterprise. It was a third-party certificate, but it showed enterprise. It took me a little while to figure out what it was, because I was like, I use them all the time. It always works. And in this case, it didn't work. Now, sometimes when you get a certificate from a certification authority, you also have to import the root certification authority's certificate so that, you know, the entire chain is valid. Well, the P place where you import that root CAS certificate into your certificate store is important. Typically, you would store it in the third-party root certification authorities. If you do that, this value will show third-party. However, if for some reason, and I had other customers too that do that, you import it into any of the other containers, the certificate will show up as valid, but the value here will be enterprise. So if you, for instance, take the DigiCert Root CA and import it into your enterprise Root CA trusted certification authorities, I don't know the name by heart, it'll show a different value, and the hybrid configuration will tell you, I'm not finding the right certificate. So it's a little tiny thing that can have a big impact. So make sure that you take that into account too. So that's for the certificate part. There was the web services that I talked about. Well, you have the set web services virtual directory, and then you have the MRIS proxy enabled. That should be this command. So for anyone want to have a reference, once you do run this command, the mailbox replication service proxy, which is responsible for handling the mailbox move requests from Office 365, will be enabled on that web services virtual directory. Some things I came across in some of the deployment is that you run hybrid configuration wizard, life's good, no errors at all, everything works perfectly. You start a mailbox move and it fails. So there are many reasons why a mailbox move might fail. One of the things that I did notice in pretty much every build of Exchange 2013, Service Pack 1, Exchange 2013 up to Service Pack 1, is that in some environments, and I have no idea why, and it doesn't always happen all the time, I'm just pointing it out that it could happen, you have to go to the web service virtual directory and then set the WS security enabled to true. So WS authentication, you have to re-enable it. If you go to the Get Web Services Virtual Directory and you take a look, it says that it's enabled, but it doesn't work. So by re-enabling it, just by reconfirming that it enables, your mailbox move will work. I do have to admit that it used to happen more often before, but it still happens once in a while in a deployment, and I have no idea why. And there's no logging that makes any sense out of it, but just to keep in mind that that could happen. It's not a big deal, but if you're troubleshooting, make sure to take that into account. So let me put the slides back on screen for just a second. There we go. Who in here used to set up hybrid in Exchange 2010 Service Pack 1. Wow, brave people. I remember the very first time I was doing it, it took me literally 48 hours to figure out how it worked. I was kind of tired after those 48 hours, and the first thing I thought is, whoa, man, I really hope they're going to make things easier, because I'm sure that anyone who went through the effort will appreciate the screenshots here. You all know them, you went through the different processes, setting the application URI manually, making sure that everything was working, taking a look at different settings, federation information. You had to set up everything manually, and then by the time you have set your email address policies, the service domain, by the time you would actually end up with the MRS proxy that you had to enable through a text file. And then all of a sudden, the first thing you did is, run the hybrid configuration wizard. And this is what you got. An exception has been thrown by the target of an invocation. Yeah. Basically, it said, hey, something went wrong. Something. Anything went wrong. My first instinct when I teach about this, or when I used to teach about this, was, back, try it again. If it doesn't work first time, try it again. And sometimes, you would run the hybrid configuration 3-4 times, and then all of a sudden it would work for whatever reason. Sometimes it wouldn't, and actually something was broken. So I'm very happy that we got rid of this and we got to the new hybrid configuration wizard, which is a single step. It still does everything behind the scenes. It's a two-step thing, but you don't see it. To you, it's a single-step configuration wizard. It takes into account advanced mail flow capabilities, the edge transport server, the TLS, as I said. Makes your life much easier compared to before. And even it makes your life much easier compared to the hybrid configuration wizard we actually service back two of Exchange 2010, which was really good at its time. It still is really good, but it's not as good at as the Exchange 2013 one. You know, it leverages Exchange Online protection, makes the changes in Exchange Online for you. But more importantly, logging is awesome. And I'll go through some of the hybrid configuration logs later to actually show you what is being logged, but it's really, really, really good. And it didn't used to be like that. So what does the hybrid configuration wizard actually do? Well, you run the hybrid configuration wizard, and then what it does, based on the input that you're giving to it, it crafts a desired state, like, this is where I want to be. Then it goes to your environment and takes a look at what do I already have to make this happen. Is the hybrid configuration wizard already run before? If so, what settings were used? And then based on what you entered in the hybrid configuration wizard and what it currently has in its environment, it will create a delta configuration, and it will use the changes that it sees between the desired and the current state to push out any changes to Exchange Online and to your on-premises environment. So from a high-level point of view, that's fairly easy. That's what the hybrid configuration wizard does. You could do it manually, but you'll end up unsupported. So if you're going to do that, run a hybrid configuration wizard and you're good. What we're going to do now is break down these steps one by one and take a look what the hybrid configuration wizard actually does in the back. So the first step it does is take a look at the desired state. Basically, it runs the get hybrid configuration commandlet. If you run that commandlet, you'll get a few settings back. And you'll see that it will list the hybrid functionality, which is allowed. The hybrid configuration will enable all of them. Recently, a few months ago, they added the photos functionality, which basically allows you to exchange pictures, 3D Exchange web services between your environments. It will list the domains which are in scope of the configurations, the ones that you specify during the hybrid configuration wizard, and it will check the mail flow parameters, the connectors inbound, outbound, certificates that you specified, and so forth and so on. The second step is that it will take that information and check anything. So it will make sure that, what do I already have? How are my connectors configured? Do I already have them? How about my organization relationships, the trust within my federation gateway? How are my domains configured, my email address policies? And there are some changes in how the hybrid configuration wizard treats the email address policies, and we'll see that in just a second. And changes for the better, because previously, the hybrid configuration wizard would run, it would stamp your default email address policy with your service domain, which is a very critical part, and then would push out the updates to all your recipients, which could, in some cases, could cause some issues. It doesn't do that anymore. It's more considerate about your own environment. A third step the hybrid configuration wizard goes through is configuring recipients. So it'll take the service domain, which you used to create manually. It will create, it will use the one that's created for you. The name of your tenant.mail.microsoft.com. We'll use that service domain, add it to your email address policies, but it will use the update secondary proxy addresses only switch to make sure that anything you have configured isn't touched at all, that nothing breaks in your environment, so that it's kind of in stealth mode, but still make sure that it works. Once all the recipients are updated, it will move on. Important note here, and when I teach a Office 365 class, there will always be someone running into this issue. Because you can do things really, really fast, and I mean within the boundaries of 75 minutes, you could do and set up a hybrid configuration. So you're excited, you're all in, you run the hybrid configuration wizard, and the first thing that you'll do is move a mailbox. If you try moving a mailbox in between the time that you ran the hybrid configuration wizard, but before DirSync ran, it won't work. you'll get a nice warning or error message telling you, hey, this move failed because, you know, the recipient, or actually the remote mailbox that you're trying to move to, doesn't have the email address or the service domain stamped on the user object. That is because DirtSync needs to take that change from the on-premises environment and get it to Office 365 first. So when you run the hybrid configuration wizard, either sit back and relax, go have a coffee, go have a chat, or run DirtSync manually once. Especially if you're, you know, excited and you're working per day, not per hour, that might be a good idea. If you're lucky that you ran the hybrid configuration wizard and that DirtSync happens to run 5 minutes after it, you're good. But, you know, a fourth step of the hybrid configuration wizard is configuring Federation. It will set up a trust with the Microsoft Federation Gateway. It will, you know, ask you, and the wizard will actually ask you to make changes or make sure that your domain is verified for Federation. So it will give you a, you know, the text record that you have to create for the domain Federation. It will give you that during the wizard, ask you to update your public DNS zone to add it to it so that it will verify, so that it can create the trust with the Microsoft Federation Gateway for you. So that's what it does here. Obviously, it only needs to do that on-premises, because Office 365 is by default already federated with the Microsoft Federation Gateway, so no changes there. If you already have a trust with the Microsoft Federation Gateway, the Hybrid Configuration Wizard will do nothing. Just move on and happily ignore that there is already a trust in place. In a fifth step, it will create the on-premises organization relationships. It will literally run this command. It will create an on-prem to Office 365 when you're in your on-premises environment, give it the name on-premises to O365, which is a default in Exchange 2013. Give it a target application URI, we'll automatically set it. The auto-discover API will set it as that to that too. Enable the organization relationship and add the service domain that you use or that was specified for your tenant. Logically, a follow-up to that step is create the other way around. There is also an organization relationship from your own Exchange Online to your on-premises environment. And there it will actually leverage your auto-discover. So I don't know, for the people who attended the session yesterday, when they ran the video about the hybrid configuration wizard, at the end there was this warning, hey, we couldn't, you know, contact your on-premises auto-discover environment. Well, that is because they did discover the auto-discover endpoint, but it didn't work, certificate wasn't working whatsoever. So the hybrid configuration wizard will finish, will configure it correctly, but it won't work, it will throw the warning. That could be because, you know, the auto-discover endpoint that you see here isn't working. You can control which domain that you add to the hybrid configuration wizard is being used for auto-discover. It's quite a while ago, they added a switch to the hybrid configuration wizard, or a flag that you could check, which basically says that, hey, this is the domain that you should look for, or that you should take a look at for auto-discover, especially if you've got a large number of domains, different domains. There might be one that you say, hey, everyone's using this for auto-discover. The hybrid configuration wizard does take that into account, and I'll show you when we go through the hybrid configuration wizard in a minute. Once that's done, so once the organization relationships are configured, it will, or are created, it will configure them with the free busy access level, some parameters, but it will all do so for you. It will also create an availability address space on-premises environment. It doesn't need to do that in Office 365, so that all happens for you. And then as a last step, it will go into your environment and set up Mailflow. It will take the certificate that you specified, configure it on the send connectors, on the receive connectors, on the inbound connectors in Office 365, and on the outbound connectors in the tenants. Depending on the mail routing scenario that you chose. So one of the first steps that you have in your hybrid configuration wizard is, do you want centralized mail transport or not? Centralized means that everything goes through your on-premises environment to reach Office 365, and it's being routed through your on-premises environment back out. If you chose that option, the route all messages via on-premises true switch is also used for the outbound connector. Okay, so Let's try and run the hybrid configuration wizard for a second. And I'm going to be brutally honest. I cheated a little bit. I already ran it before, just to make sure that it would work. So I'm going to give me a second. A little bit of lag on the machine. So I'm going to log in into the EAC on this machine. If it lets me to. Give me a little second here. Let's cheat a little bit. So usually this should be a little bit quicker, but I was having some issues with the lab earlier. So okay, there we are. Let's quickly sign in. So basically, when you sign in into the EAC, you will see that there is a an option by default there in Office 365. Which, you know, by default in Exchange 2013, which allow you to easily switch between your on-premises admin center and Office 365. And I sincerely hope that it, you know, allows me to log in. So while we're waiting for the page to load, what actually happens the very first time that you run the hybrid configuration wizard, or before you run it, if you click on the Office 365 button, it will just redirect you to the Office 365 portal, page with some, you know, marketing information. However, once you go into the hybrid tab on premises and you enable the hybrid configuration, it will actually change the link where you're going to go to, and it will point to the administrative endpoint, the EAC in Office 365, so that you can easily switch between the environments. One thing that is very important is that to know that it heavily relies on cookies. So if you have a very secure environment where your Internet Explorer is locked down and, you know, cookies aren't allowed, this is probably going to cause some issues. So make sure that, you know, you set the necessary security exceptions that your own domains and that Outlook.com are seen as a secure sites that can store cookies on the administrative machine that you're working on from where you're running it. So here you have it, the hybrid tab. When you click enable, the wizard will start. It's basically the same thing as when you click modify. And if you're not logged in, automatically it says, hey, I don't find the authentication cookie that you should have had, so please sign into Office 365. So I'm going to do that right away, if it allows me to. And as you see, I'll be redirected to that, to the admin portal. So I will do that right away. I'm sorry about the typing. And this should work. Oh, man. So I think I'm having issues with the keyboard. Sorry for that, people. I should have prayed to the demo gods earlier today. That always happens to me. Oh, anyway. So luckily, I'm a little bit prepared. It always happens to me with those complex passwords. You know how it goes. I don't have two-factor authentication, so I try to go with complex passwords. And QWERTY, it kills me. So anyway, what I was about to show you is, you know, you can log in into into Office 365, and you'll see the wizard. I won't show it to you live, but hey, there is no. It's basically the same thing. So yes, do you want to modify the hybrid configuration? Just it goes through the wizard. You click yes. That's not a problem. The second screen that you'll see is the client access servers. So you can actually choose control which client access servers in your environment are being configured for that hybrid configuration. Why is that important? Well, if you're just, you know, selectively selecting a few ones, if you have multiple sites, if you have a specific set of servers that you set up, so if you have two Exchange 2013 servers in an Exchange 2007 environment, those are the ones that you're going to add in there to act as the hybrid service. The second step that you will see is the on-premises mailbox servers. Why is it asking for the mailbox servers? Well, as I said previously, that's because of the receive part for the CAS and the sending part, so it needs to be able to identify which servers are going to be authoritative for sending messages to Office 365 from your on-premises environment. Then this screen will be slightly different when you run it for the first time. It will ask you for the certificate. Here you can see the certificate that I selected. So this is the TLS certificate. Again, we talked about this extensively. Make sure that it's configured properly. It has all the properties. It's a third-party certificate. But if you want to, for whatever reason, you can always change it in here. You can always do that easily. Before this session, I was talking to someone in the audience, and he said, well, maybe you could go in and show how you can do that manually. So everything that we talk about here today is something you could really do manually. You'll have to use PowerShell to do that because, you know, there are some things that aren't exposed in the GUI. But you really, really shouldn't unless you run into issues. So the hybrid configuration wizard basically is the thing that will get you going. During the session yesterday, they really mentioned it. Hey, you can run the hybrid configuration wizard multiple times. So if you want to change something, do it in here. Only when this doesn't work, fails for some reason, and you really, really need to get it going, go into PowerShell, use the set outbound connector, set inbound connector, set send connector, set receive connector, and change the parameters if you want to. Will it work? Yes. But, you know, just to point that out a little bit. Then, one of the points, it will ask you for your MRS proxy endpoint. So that's where Office 365 will connect to initiate the remote mailbox moves. It will ask you credentials from your on-premises and your cloud environment, and then it will start. That's as easy as it is. It's just a few screens to go through. If you run into issues in the hybrid configuration wizard, you click back and click, you know, run it again, it'll fail because it doesn't keep the credentials. So you will have to go back to the credentials, fill them in, and then run it again if you want to run it immediately again. However, you know, when you click modify, you'll have to enter them anyway. How long does it take? I have no idea. I had the hybrid configuration wizard literally run in 5 minutes in a new environment that didn't run a hybrid configuration wizard before, which was really quick, and I had the hybrid configuration wizard take 15 minutes. Doesn't matter, not really, but just keep that in mind. So it'll run through some of the steps, and once it's done, you'll get this. Okay, you're done. Hybrid configuration wizard is ready. So once that's done, or once you run into issues, what do you do next? Well, there is a bunch of things that you can do. You all know what the different things are that come into play that are important for the hybrid configuration wizard now. We talked about it. Well, the first thing that you go to if your hybrid configuration wizard fails is the update hybrid configuration log. It is really, really, really good. And I'll show it to you before going on to the next slide in just a minute. But there are other things that, you know, fail quite regularly. Well, regularly is maybe put badly, but that can fail. Federation information. One of the places to start with is, you know, can I query the federation information of that domain that I'm trying to set up? That's something that consultants can do for a remote organization. So if I'm troubleshooting a client, I can just use my computer, connect to Exchange Online, and do a get federation information for that domain name. If that doesn't work, you know there's something wrong with, you know, the Exchange Federation part, the setup for the Microsoft Federation Gateway. This kind of helped me find an issue recently where, I think it was somewhere in February, where there were changes made to the Federation Gateway, but they lost all the Federation information, so you had to update the metadata. This was the first thing I did, tried to fetch the Federation meta information for that domain. Sometimes it would work, sometimes it wouldn't work, so I found out, hey, there is an issue. I ran the test for federation information, test federation commandlet that, you know, popped out. Obviously, there are some tools out there. Well, actually, there is only one tool out there that could, you know, surface that. But we'll talk about that in a second. Organization relationships, test organization relationship, get organization relationship, commandments that really can help you. Troubleshooting if you ever, you know, have FreeBSD that doesn't work. The test organization relationship will actually do a sort of end-to-end test. So it will try and get a token from the Microsoft Federation Gateway and then make sure that you can contact the remote organization to get the information that you want to. But more importantly, and I said it earlier, the remote connectivity analyzer gives you all the tools you need to do a inbound test of your environment to make sure everything's working there, to check if you can log in through ADFS into Office 365, and so forth and so on. So there's a lot of options that you have there that you can use. So let me quickly try and move back to the virtual machine I had before. Let me get out here. And let me get to the update hybrid configuration log. So I have here program files, Microsoft Exchange Server 2013, logging, and we have the update hybrid configuration log folder here. So I purposely ran into some issues to, you know, get a log file with issues. So what you can see here is really what I talked about, all the steps that it's going through. So it's going to, you know, do some checking first. The first thing that you see here is that, unable to determine the tenant routing domain. It's basically the same issue, the same error message that you will see in a hybrid configuration wizard, but sometimes there are more information here. To give you an idea, it couldn't find the routing domain because I didn't enable dirsync first, because as soon as you enable dirsync in your tenants, your service domain pops up. As I said, dirsync is a prerequisite, so I shouldn't have run the hybrid configuration wizard in the first place. So I went in, I tried again, it didn't work. I went in, I tried again. Oh! So here I ran into another issue, an exception. Hybrid domain that I'm trying to configure isn't an accepted domain in Office 365. Oh, right, yeah. I had to go in and the domain that I'm trying to configure in hybrid, I have to add it as a valid verified domain in Office 365. So just to give you an idea, there is clear text information, humanly readable information in there that you can use. All in all, when you go through the hybrid configuration log, and it runs completely, you'll get something similar where you really see the commandments that it's executing. So one of the things that I really like to do is when the hybrid configuration wizard fails at one point, I just take the commandlet that it says that it just executed and run it myself to see what the result is. Maybe run it with a verbose switch to get a little bit more information. Obviously, some of the commandlets that you run in Office 365 don't allow you to do the verbose switch, but most of them do. So that's a good starting point to start troubleshooting, but at least it'll tell you what it's doing, what commandlet it's running, and you can easily, you know, go in and troubleshoot. And this is, to me, a lovely feature in Exchange 2013. I really love it because it considerably saves me a lot of time when troubleshooting hybrid deployments. So let me get the screen back up and running. Some real world issues and questions. How about third party devices? IronPorn, mail filtering devices. It won't work. You have to open up a port to your mailbox, your client access servers on premises to make that work, or through an edge transport server because of the internal header, which cannot be stripped because of the TLS having the TLS channel having to be maintained end to end. Again, will you be able to set it up and make it work? Yes, but you'll end up in a not supported state. I talked to some Microsoft people, and maybe somewhere in the future, who knows, we'll make that happen. But for now, it's something that a lot of customers have been asking for, but there is no real way around it. The Edge Transport Server is a real good option, but think about it. MRIs, actually, Exchange servers in multiple sites. You know, if you've got a global deployment, you don't want to, you know, mailbox moves going through your on-premises environment in the United States for a mailbox that's located in Asia. That would make no sense. Well, if you run the move mailbox or the wizard in Office 365, you can actually specify if you want to an endpoint where it connects to. That endpoint could be in the United States, could be in America, in Europe, in Asia Pacific. It doesn't matter. So it is really possible to, you know, have different endpoints. However, for the common activities, FreeBSD exchanging of information, you only have the client access service that you specify in the hybrid configuration wizard, and there's actually only one, you know, external namespace that's being used through AutoDiscover. So is it possible? Yes. Do you have to take into account specific things? Not really. You could, for instance, you know, have the default default Outlook Anywhere endpoint that you connect to for mailbox moves. You use it for common mailbox moves, but you could really set up a different one that, you know, bypasses certain security settings in your firewall, you know, to mitigate the some of the security features, like, you know, the TMG used to have the flood mitigation, which doesn't work very well with remote mailbox moves. So what I used to do is, you know, set up a separate namespace in the TMG, a different IP address, disable flood mitigation for traffic coming in through that IP address, so it only affects the mailbox moves and it doesn't affect any other traffic which it secures. WAN accelerators. I don't get that question very often, but I do get it when bandwidth is limited and there's a lot of data involved. Can you use them? Probably, yes. Do you want to use them? No, not really. Every single time I have been using WAN accelerators, I run into issues of some sorts. They are very difficult to set up, very difficult to maintain, and it takes a long time to get them up and running. Once you get them up and running, though, it'll probably work, but you should ask yourself, is it worth the effort? And in some cases, the answer is yes. Then you'll have to go through the pain of setting them up and making sure that it works, but it doesn't always make sense. How about relaying emails, unauthenticated SMTP traffic? As I said, there are some options here. I'm not going to go through them. You all get the slides. But, you know, Office 365 allows you to do authenticated SMTP with a user account with its own limits. But you can also use unauthenticated SMTP, which gives you a reasonable limit. I have no idea what reasonable limit means, but I think if you're a spammer, you won't have, you know, much chance of using Office 365. Although there are some that do the spear phishing attacks through some, you know, trial tenants here and there. I noticed it. So for your reference, there are some tips on there. So quickly about hybrid mailbox moves, and the reason I put it in here is to talk about one misconception. You are not pushing data to Office 365. Exchange Online is pulling data from your environment. So it's not an outbound connection, it is an inbound connection. Basically, what you do when you create a mailbox move in the EAC in Office 365, you define the move with the number of mailboxes, and it will create an inbound connection to your Exchange Web Services virtual directory, the MRS proxy, and it will start pulling in the data for that mailbox. It will, you know, suck in the data into Exchange Online, and once all the data is in Exchange Online, and depending, you know, on the size, could take a while, it will make an update to the on-premises object to make sure that the on-premises object is no longer a mailbox-enabled object, but the mailbox in Office 365 is. Very important from a security firewalling point of view. What is the user experience? Well, depending on your setup, it will be fairly transparent. There will be an Outlook restart involved because you're changing the environments. Your Outlook will start prompting for credentials because it's using basic auth. So depending on how your environment was set up previously, your users will get an authentication request. They type in the username and password. They have to type in the UPN if you're using ADFS. Well, they have to use the UPN anyway. And then they click Save Credentials and they won't be prompted for credentials anymore. But it's a slight change in behavior. Should be well communicated with your end users. So that is very important. Some of the known limitations and issues. Calendar federation between two hybrid deployments. I won't go into depth because that's a session in its own right. But I mean, if you have a hybrid environment or even a on-premises environment and you're federating with a hybrid tenant, you can exchange FreeBSD with the on-premises environment, no problem. But once you try fetching federation information for, or FreeBSD information, sorry, for a user account for that other organization who is in the cloud, it'll fail by default. Because Exchange doesn't handle the redirect it gets from the on-premises organization telling them, hey, the mailbox is actually in Office 365. So there are some hoops to go through, setting up GAL synchronization and an additional organization relationship. There is a blog post on the MVP blog which describes all that. But you know, it's a limitation. Certificate requirements, I talked about it. The subject name of the certificate, the TLS certificate that you have, cannot be longer than 256 characters. I have no idea why you want that, but I have come across some CAs that do really funky stuff with the subject name, and the hybrid configuration wizard will fail. So take that into account. I talked about the cross-premises permissions, so I'm not going to go back into detail. That's very important, but I'm going to talk about the items larger as 25 megs. I think it was during one of the sessions yesterday, it came up like, what do we do about, you know, items larger as 25 megs? They will not be migrated. There is an item limit in Office 365 which says, well, any item larger as 25 megs, I cannot handle them, so I'm not moving them. By default, a hybrid mailbox move will fail. You can set the option, hey, yes, I'll allow, you know, large items to be, you know, not deleted, but to be left behind, and that means that they won't make it into Office 365. But you would want to know upfront which items that are. There is a script on TechNet which will allow you to discover that information in your environment and dump it into a CSV file so that you know which mailboxes contain large items and what these large items are. So from a planning perspective, a very important part in your environment. Common issues, certificates that expire, so make sure that you monitor them. If you have the time, go to the partner area. There is one tool that does the hybrid monitoring, which can make your life easy, but you could do it yourself too, but don't forget to monitor it. So the guys from eNow, they do that, all that for you, but if you have a tool that does certificate monitoring, make sure to do the TLS certificates, make sure to check the ADFS certificates, make sure to check the web services certificate, your Exchange certificate in general. Single sign-on not working, your ADFS infrastructure, make sure to check all that. FreeBSD, same thing. Monitor that, your organizational relationships, your TLS channel, which kind of refers back to the certificate. It's very important that you take a look at that. And Outlook-related settings. Once you go to Office 365, you have to keep up with the cadence, meaning you'll have to update Outlook quite regularly. Sometimes, you know, it's better to make sure that, you know, are always on the latest CU for Outlook as well, because there are times when they roll out an update in Office 365, and that requires, you know, some updating in the Outlook client, which is differently from how you might have managed your on-premises environment before. It's maybe you're still running an older version, but you know, it's quite critical. It's not really tied to having a hybrid deployment, but still, it is something to take with you. Another issue I came across recently is data center IP addresses and firewalls. Not all firewalls support, you know, ACLs based on domain names, so they still want IP addresses. But who went to the talk about security end-to-end, you know, IP addresses were running out. So the IP address ranges that Microsoft have, you know, they have a bunch of ranges. It's not one big block. So they do change sometimes. They do add IP addresses from time to time. And that's giving some security guys a hard time. But they should understand that if they do not do it based on a domain name, Outlook.com, for instance, well, they'll just have to update their firewalls if they really want to block traffic like that. But it's something I come across quite regularly, and basically there is no good answer to that. How do you manage that? Yeah, well, update the IP addresses regularly. So when your hybrid deployment is ready, what's next? You need to manage it. You need to still monitor it. How do you monitor it? It's difficult. You don't care about what's running in the Office 365 data centers. You care about the functionality, so make sure that you test the functionality end-to-end, that you make sure that, you know, you capture how is my service behaving, is FreeBSD working, is my mail flow working. That's what you want to care about. you don't care if they run out of memory in the data center. That's their problem. You know, you've had that before. You've been there. You've done that. It's old news. So to finish up the session, and I'll go a little bit over time because you know, the mic was a little bit late. What's going to happen in the future? Definitely OAuth. I'm not going to say much, but I expect OAuth to become more and more prevalent in the future. It's being used for Exchange to SharePoint connections, Exchange to Link. And today, you also need to set up OAuth between your on-premises environment and Office 365 to make cross-premises e-discovery work. It's a bunch of steps that you have to go through, and the first time that you go through them might be a little bit daunting with many things, but I expect to, you know, that to improve in the future. It also only, you know, works for Exchange 2013 Service Pack 1 environments only. So it's kind of, who is running a greenfield Exchange 2013 SP1 environment here? Right. So there you have the answer. Will it be used for other features in the future? I guess so, but today it's only e-discovery. So there's nothing that that tells you that you should rush out and go set up OAuth today because you'll run into issues. No, but just know that it's coming. OAuth is really important. So take a look at that. I put up the link on screen, which gives you a little bit more information. Go out and take a look at it. So to wrap up this session a little bit, the conclusion is that you know this is what they sold you to you to be. That's what you thought it was. And actually, when you get them both together, it kind of looks like this. It's a bigger Rubik's Cube. And if you get everything straight, the hybrid configuration is fairly easy and straightforward. But it is utterly important to prepare and prepare and prepare. Make sure that you have everything set up. You know, running the hybrid configuration wizard is easy. Preparing for it, making sure that you have everything covered that we talked about and could talk about for hours and hours without end, that you have that set up. If possible, use Exchange 2013 because it's so much better. It really is. It does a really good job compared to the other versions. And even though I'm a techie and I want to do things manually and it's cool to do stuff like that, just run the wizard. It's so much easier. So. This being said, sorry to have gone over time a little bit. Thank you very much. I'll be here. I'll also be at the expo hall later today. So if you have any questions, please feel free to come and find me. Also make sure to fill out your evals. And other than that, thank you so much and have fun at Mac.